Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Monday, June 3rd, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Drivers will continue to travel free on the Alaska Marine Highway at least through next April. That's according to a schedule released by the state-run ferry system on Friday. After the winter 2013-2014 ferry schedule concludes on April 30th, 2014, passengers driving a car onto the ferry will have to pay for a ticket for themselves. A separate 30% discount for round-trip tickets will disappear earlier on October 1st, 2013. The ferry system said in a statement that the move is to make up for a smaller budget. The state cut the Marine Highway's operating budget by about $3.5 million for the next fiscal year. Jeremy Woodrow is a spokesman for the Marine Highway.
Every department in the state received a reduction in their operating budget, so this is just the amount that was given to AMHS. Department of Transportation had cuts across the board, and this is just AMHS's amount for their operating budget.
The Marine Highway also plans to save money by returning the fast ferries Fairweather and Taku back to service a little later in the spring. The Fairweather is undergoing a massive overhaul this winter. It includes new engines, which are the result of a settlement between the state and the engine makers after the Fairweather and its sister ship, the Chinigaa, experienced repeated engine problems. For Sitka, the schedule includes approximately one northbound sailing and two southbound sailings every week. That goes against the city's wishes for two boats north and two boats south every week. A letter from the city to the Marine Highway in April protests the plan, saying one northbound ferry per week for 7 months severely restricts Sitka's use of the ferry system. Woodrow says geography is definitely a factor in Sitka's schedule.
It's not on a line-to-line route, as a lot of communities are along the Marine Highway system, especially in southeast Alaska. For instance, like if you're riding from Ketchikan north, you hit Wrangell and Petersburg in pretty easy concession. But when you have to go out to Sitka, it's a jog left instead of continuing on. So it takes time to get there, and so it's difficult to schedule all the ships to be able to get to that direction and back in enough time.
The complete winter schedule is online at ferryalaska.com. The affordable housing problem in Sitka affects everyone in some way, but it's most acute for people who are actually trying to buy a house. 25 years ago, it could be done on one income. Nowadays, buying a home is out of reach for a lot of two-income families. Randy Huey would like to change that. A recently retired high school shop teacher wants his grown children to have the same opportunity to build a life in Sitka that he did. In the fourth and final part of our interview series on community land trusts, KCAW's Robert Woolsey spoke with Huey about his passion for changing the paradigm of Sitka's housing market.
Around the end of the year, the high school wood shop is stacked with projects of all kinds. 40 nightstands made by the Wood One students here, spectacular gun cases and entertainment centers made by more advanced kids there. Randy Huey has an amazing capacity for getting projects across the goal line.
You know, everyone agrees affordable housing is a problem. Let's do something.
Huey thinks houses have just grown too large, too much square footage per occupant. When he was growing up, his family of six lived in an 800-square-foot house. By the time he was in high school, they had moved to an 1,100-square-foot house.
It was affordable. My parents weren't financially stressed. They lived on one blue-collar income. And we didn't know that it was a problem. In hindsight, it was, you know, you look back and go, how did we ever do that? We were pretty packed in there. But it was entirely doable.
The national average house now is 2,300 square feet. Huey is on the board of the Sitka Community Development Corporation, which is exploring the idea of establishing a community land trust as a way to create affordable housing. CLTs reduce the cost of a home by about one-third by selling only the structure to a buyer and holding the land in trust. According to data compiled by the Sitka Community Development Corporation, a typical house in town costs around $350,000. To buy it conventionally, someone would have to come up with a cash down payment of 20%, or $70,000. Even at today's low mortgage interest rates, it would mean payments of over $3,000 per month. Some families have the cash to pull this off, and
there are lots of people who do not. Lots of families that do not. And no, you know, just around the corner opportunity for that to change significantly.
Huey believes a community land trust is another form of opportunity. Building smaller homes in the trust is a further way to pare down costs and broaden opportunity. The small houses he was raised in were not demeaning. Modern designs are flourishing online and making smaller houses downright attractive. Huey thinks all the pieces are here to solve the affordability puzzle.
I want to change the economics of a family here, you know. I want to make it so that, you know, that not everybody has to work all of the time and that there's always financial pressure on the family, on mom and dad, in order to have a house to live in. And I want to get out of rentals. I want to get out of some much of the substandard housing that's being lived in here. And yet I do not want giveaway programs. I want there to be something where people have to invest, that they have to bring something to the table, and that they have then ownership, they are vested in it, and they have a benefit in doing good maintenance and upkeep of the home, and they can get the real nest egg that they need to get out on the open market.
The Sitka Community Development Corporation has spent the past 2 months running articles in the local paper and appearing on radio to make the case for community land trusts. Because CLTs involve ownership, allow buyers to build equity, yet limit profit on resale, they're seen as a kind of hybrid between the open market and a more tightly controlled housing project. Still, you have to start somewhere with a community land trust. It can often involve the donation of municipal property. The SCDC thinks education ahead of time will build the necessary political will.
We're talking about the allocation of publicly owned resources towards a particular problem. We're going to need people's support for that, not just on the assembly, but I think there needs to be a broad agreement that this is an affordable housing model that should be tried. And then we just try.
Huey is adamant that a CLT is not a charity. He doesn't see Habitat for Humanity or a high school vocational program putting up one or two houses a year. He thinks the situation is far too acute. A CLT, he believes, is going to put carpenters to work. Political boundaries can be changed to make land available. The existing development and construction industry can be called in to help accurately forecast costs. Huey says it's time for all hands on deck.
It's a problem that is worthy of our best efforts because it's our children. And I want to create a community that my children could come back and live here in, or your kids, or all of the people my age in town who have kids. I want them to be able to come to Sitka and live here and raise their families here, bring my grandkids home. That's why I'm working on it.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
To take a short survey from the Sitka Community Development Corporation about community land trusts, visit our website, kcaw.org. A native artist in Ketchikan has been awarded a $7,500 project grant from the Rasmussen Foundation to carve a traditional red cedar canoe. As KRBD's Layla Carey reports, the project is more than building a boat.
Nahan, who goes by one name, says the canoe project was inspired by his ancestors and their traditional mode of transportation. Nahan grew up in Washington State, where he participated in tribal canoe journeys.
Down there, there's, you know, 100 canoes that'll paddle in the water at the same time, each representing their own tribe and their own songs and their own protocols and languages, and it really empowers the youth. And I really want to see that for the community here in Ketchikan, Saxman, and Prince of Wales, a little bit more, you know, to travel like we used to.
He says the Ketchikan Area Arts and Humanities Council encouraged him to apply for the grant, and he's honored to be selected. It will take a while to get a finished canoe, and the first step is to find a tree, either from private land or the Forest Service. Once the tree is down, the log will be taken to the Saxman carving shed, and at that point, Nahan hopes to make it a community project.
There's going to be a lot of basic just adzing and that sort of thing, and that can be done by a lot of different people. So, and, you know, I think it wouldn't be too hard to put out an invite to a group of students, or just send out some emails about the project itself to students of different ages, and especially the native ones, and get them involved in the project and comfortable with holding the tools and that sort of thing. So,
Nahan says this canoe will be his first full-size carving project, so it will be a learning process for him too. He's working now with master carver Nathan Jackson to create a model-size canoe. Art has been a constant part of Nahan's life.
Rick and Mick Beasley, they used to do designs and get them blown up for whatever reason on large sheets of paper. And I remember as a kid having those all the time. And they'd be under my bed, and I'd get them out and fill in the black and fill in the red. And so it's always been by me.
But he says he became truly serious about Native art a few years ago when he started working on designs for tattoos. That heightened his interest in the art form, and then he decided to move to Juneau to study the Tlingit language and culture. After Juneau, he moved to Ketchikan to be with his father, Roger Alexander, and to continue learning about the culture. The canoe project is part of reclaiming his identity as an Alaska Native.
The waters are the highways of our ancestors, and their voices are still echoing throughout the water, and we go out there and listen to them. We're able to receive some healing from that. We're able to get some of those songs that we might think are new, go out there and hear a song and think, oh, it's a brand new song, but in reality it might be an old song that needs to be sung here today. And I think, you know, looking at the experience of the canoeing in a spiritual way is really what I'm reaching for.
The canoe was one of 25 project grants awarded earlier this month by the Rasmussen Foundation. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Ketchikan carver Norman Jackson also was recognized by the Rasmussen Foundation with his second $18,000 individual artist fellowship. Through the grant, he plans to collaborate with Maori artists for an exhibit in New Zealand next year. And that is all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, visit us online at kcaw.org. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.